The Holy Gospel according to John. Glory to you, O Lord. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then, are you Elijah?" And he said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you have to say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah nor Elijah nor the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandals." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan where John was baptizing. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. So this is a sermon about yeses and nos, about how much we love to say yes and how much our culture kind of grooms us to say yes, and how, as people of faith, sometimes the word that's got to come out of our mouth is no. So I wanted to start with a story or an image of my grandparents' garden. When I was a kid, they had this huge yard in their home in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and in the corner of it was this tiny little vegetable garden that they had set up. It was just perfect. It had this adorable little chicken wire fence and a little gate to go in and out of. I just loved being in that garden as a kid. They grew everything. They grew green beans and yellow beans and squash and tomatoes and lettuce and melons and all sorts of good stuff. They'd eat it throughout the summer and freeze some for the winter. And it was just such a part of being at my grandparents' house in the summertime. As they got older, the garden got simpler. You know, eventually it was just the beans and the tomatoes and the lettuce. And then eventually it was just the tomatoes, because you know as well as I do, you can't get a tomato at the store that's as good as the tomato you can grow in your yard in the fresh, beautiful sunlight. And so they held on with the tomatoes for a while, until my grandpa got older and older, and eventually they said no. No more garden. No more bending down to weed. No more watering. No more having to get the neighbors to look after it while they have weekends away. Just no more. No. And no can be sad, and it can be disappointing. It can be an end. But no can also be a lifesaver. I mean, think about those 80-something-year-old knees. No can be a lifesaver. No can mean I don't have to be everything anymore. No can mean I'm a human being with limitations, and sometimes that just feels good. No means I am not God. I am not omnipotent. I cannot do all things. I cannot be all places. No, I am not God. Which means that as people of faith, when we lovingly and truthfully yield the word no, because no is the only true answer, it is an act of deep faithfulness and trust. It's a way of saying to ourselves and the world around us and God, "I'm not God. I'm going to stop trying to be God, so that God can start being God." And that is the way reality actually is. And so when we say no, we're entering into what's real. I'm not God. God is actually God. No is awesome. Cue John the Baptist, the patron saint of no. I mean, John is the absolute opposite of our people-pleasing, overextended, overcommitted, signed up for too many committees and programs and sports, yes to everyone and everything, never wants to disappoint anyone culture. John is the opposite of all of that, because John just keeps up with no, no, no. He's out baptizing in Bethany, which is 80 miles from Jerusalem, which tells you, like, these religious authorities who are coming to kind of interrogate him about who he is, like, they really want to know who he is. He's baptizing, and he doesn't have the authority to baptize. And so the Pharisees send the religious authorities out to see, like, maybe he's the Messiah or Elijah or the prophet. Maybe he has some explanation. So they go out to see who this guy is who's performing these kind of unauthorized baptisms. And so they get there and they say, "Who are you?" And John starts out with a hard no. "I am not the Messiah. Not the one who's come to save you. Don't have that kind of power. Not me." Because there was some speculation that maybe that's who this strange character was. So they come at him again. "Well, then, are you Elijah?" "Nope, I am not." They come at him again. "Well, then, are you the prophet, like Moses or someone like that?" "Nope." Another hard no. Well, now at this point, the Pharisees and the religious authorities are getting a little upset because they got to go back to the Pharisees and this guy's not giving them anything to work with. So they ask again, "Who are you? What do you have to say to your about yourself?" And here we see that the no's that John the Baptist has given, the no's to what they expect him to be and want him to be, make way for the truth of who he really is, even if it disappoints them. And he says, "Who am I? I'm just the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord.' I'm not the light. I'm just a guy out here pointing to the coming of the light." We live in a culture that values yes. Yes, from an early age, yes to all the sports, yes to all the music, yes to all the dance and the programs, and as adults, yes to all the boards and the committees, yes to the programs, yes to anything that will build a resume, yes to overcommitment. We live in a cult, in a church even, that loves the word yes. Yes, we want to give our time. We want to be benevolent. Yes, we want to give our money here, there, and everywhere. Yes, we have been charged with important things like feeding the hungry and clothing the naked. And we want to say yes to those things. So, I mean, sometimes we church people are like the worst offenders. We just want to say yes. We want to dole out yeses like Oprah doles out cars. You get a yes and you get a yes and you get a yes until we are threadbare. If I had a nickel for every time I said one of those yeses, oh, friends, I'd be a rich woman. I'm currently in recovery from all those yeses. Because so often those kind of yeses just make way for us to save the day, for us to be God. And that is not ever what we are for. If we say yes to everything, there isn't room for what God is saying yes to. There isn't room for us to see God's yes shooting up in our midst. See, it's like the prophet Isaiah envisioned in our first reading today. Isaiah's talking to this people that's been in exile for over 70 years. Now they're back in their home in Jerusalem and everything is ruined. They're in ruins. They're busted and they're broken up. And the prophet Isaiah uses the image of a garden. And he says, like shoots that spring up in springtime, I'm going to grow new life, even here in this wilderness where you are living. I'm going to make you shoot up like a giant, mighty oak tree. Not because of anything you did, not because of any yes you said, but because I say yes to you. If we say yes to everything, we completely and totally miss when God says yes to us. And so we have John the Baptist to model for us. No. Thank God, because John the Baptist isn't the Messiah, and he's not Elijah, and he's not the prophet that they think he is. And if he had falsely said yes to any of those things, there wouldn't have been room for him to say yes to what he actually is, just a humble voice crying out in the wilderness, making a way for Jesus. If he had said yes falsely to any of the things that those people expected him to be, there wouldn't have been room for him to see God's yes over his life. Yes, John, this is who you are. This is what you're for. You're not for being the Messiah. You're for preparing the way for the Messiah. And that's no small thing. So you see, we love to say yes, but no is the way that we are being called to prepare. No is like pruning shears, just hacking back the wilderness, preparing the path for the deeper, lovelier, more wholehearted yes that we are being called into. No is like the work of clearing the field so that we can see God's yes when it springs up out of the ground in front of us. Ground that we never expected anything to grow up out of, maybe. It's like this. So my grandparents said no. And by this point in my grandpa's life, he had said no to a lot. He was a retired police officer. That was long gone. He was a hobby pilot. He had said no to that. He had said no to hunting and fishing and now his garden. He had said no to driving. And at some point, I think you just look around your life when you're that age and you say, gosh, all of the things that once made my life what it is are gone. And so what else is there for me? So that's where my grandparents were. They had said this no. No to the garden, no to so many other things. And that summer, after that hard no that they had decided, right outside their back door, I kid you not, two steps outside of the back door, this volunteer cherry tomato plant sprung up against the fence, so they didn't even have to like prop it up, where no cherry tomato plants had ever been planted before. And we went to visit my grandpa that summer, my grandparents that summer. And when my grandpa showed us that plant, he wept. He chuckled. He beamed. It was like he thought maybe that all there was left in his life was one long consecutive no. And this plant was just like God looking at him and saying, yes, I still have a yes for you. So our culture prepares us and grooms us and trains us for a particular kind of yes, for the doling out of yeses, for the like never disappoint anyone, just keep saying yes. And that's not what we're made for, but we are indeed made for a deep and resounding yes, like the yeses that we say to our spouses at the altar, or the yeses that our hearts say in their deep recesses when we look at our babies for the first time. I mean, we are indeed made for yeses. But sometimes the way to that yes is through no. And friends, you know as well as I do that we are just living in this time of no. Oh my goodness, it feels sometimes like our life is just one consecutive everlasting no in this COVID time. No, we're not having in-person worship. No, we're not having communion this month. No, we're not going to sing candlelight silent night together this year. No, we're not going to visit them in the hospital. No, we're not going to give or get those hugs. No, we're not going to go visit our new niece until there's a vaccine. No, we're not getting together this year. And not just those no's, but we have been living in a season of collective no's. Last summer, as we saw the death of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, and as we heard of the death of Breonna Taylor, and as all of these deaths of Black and Brown people have surfaced, we heard a voice crying out in the wilderness, preparing a way by yelling, no, 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 no more. No more death, no more police brutality, no more under-resourcing our Black and Brown communities, no more fear, no more pretending that white supremacy isn't just the air we're breathing, no more pretending that white supremacy isn't as much in my blood as my blood cells, no more looking away from our brutal death-dealing history of racism and the injustices that it has done to Indigenous people, to Black people, to Brown people, to people now behind bars at detention centers on our borders. No, we have heard a collective no. We have been part of a collective no to the status quo of things as they have been. I mean, from everything to worship to to the status quo. We have been living in a season of no, and it can feel like such a dead end. But it is not a dead end, my friends. Our no's are just what's called for. With every utterance of no, we are laying another brick on the highway that is going to take us out of the wilderness to the coming of our very Christ. Our no's are the pruning shears that are hacking back the wilderness little by little by little, clearing the way for God's yes, which we cannot yet envision. For the yes that we've longed for, the yes that we mean with our whole hearts, for the yes that is the light of the world, the whole world, not just my little world. And so this Advent, we join with John the Baptist, our patron saint of no. And we wait. We look over this barren landscape, this cleared field, this wilderness. And we wait for the yes that God is going to grow up in our midst. Because God is going to shoot up a yes, like my grandpa's volunteer cherry tomato plant promising him, there's still something for you. Like the mighty oak tree vision in Isaiah. We are living in a time of brambles and tangly wilderness. And we ask ourselves, like, can anything here grow? And the answer is yes. God's yes is going to shoot up. It's okay that we say no a little longer while we wait and we watch for the yes that God is going to spring up in our midst. Because God loves to say that kind of yes to us. Thanks be to God. Amen.